Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Today, we're going to have the opportunity to have two very special guests, Alex and Brett Harris. And we're going to be talking about the low expectation culture of American adolescents. This is a big issue. And we're going to be talking about why it is that we have such low expectations for such a crucially important period of any individual's life. The invention of adolescence. We're going to track that a bit culturally and see what that looks like. But the bottom line of all of this is going to be the opportunity to join in a really good conversation about adolescence in America. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We would really like to involve both adolescents and parents and youth pastors, others working with this crucial period of life. The bottom line of all this is disappointment that most individuals simply are not stretched. They simply are not pushed. The expectation culture is so low that it's basically a time of adolescent bracketing, thinking that something important just might happen later on in life. But important things should be happening, and important things should be done during that period of adolescence. We're going to be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Speaking of adolescence, by the way, some will not like this particular. According to USA Today, the later teens go to bed, the greater their danger of depression. USA Today is reporting on a major study out showing that middle and high schoolers are simply not getting enough sleep before they go to bed. And if teenagers go to bed after midnight on school nights, they are 42% more likely to be depressed than teens whose parents require a 10 p.m. or earlier bedtime. Very interesting study. It really gets to some specifics here that otherwise have not been known. 10 o'clock seems to be the magic hour, because when teenagers go to bed at 10 o'clock on weeknights, they tend to get a little more than 8 hours sleep a night. And that is directly tied, as it turns out, to the reality of teenage depression. Too many adolescents are depressed, and one of the reasons is physiological. We now know they're simply not getting enough sleep. The significant difference between those who get 8 hours plus of sleep, about 8 hours and 10 minutes, versus those who stay up past midnight and get an average of 7.5 hours is huge. Talking about a 42% increase in depression. Now, folks, one of the things we know about depression is that much of it is tied to physiological phenomena. And a lack of sleep in adolescence turns out to be one of those tripwire phenomena that is really, really important. As I said at the beginning, there are a lot of teenagers who just might not like this report. But parents, I hope you're paying close attention, because this is about your kids. A 10 o'clock bedtime, huge reduction in the risk for depression. That requires parental involvement at a pretty close level. But when kids are getting less and less sleep, they're getting more and more depressed. It's showing up in terms of school performance, but it's also showing up in terms of far more dangerous phenomena in adolescence. Time Magazine is out with a fascinating cover story on Twitter, the Twitter phenomenon. And we're going to be talking about this on Friday of this week as the main topic of our conversation. We're talking about the Twitter revolution and what it means for the church. And we're going to be talking about what it means for you. And those of you who aren't Twittering, or tweeting, as it is best known as a verb, well, you may be making a principled decision not to be a part of this social networking tool. On the other hand, you may be missing out on a conversation you really want to be a part of. We're going to be talking about what this means and why Twitter is redefining social media. Just when you thought MySpace and Facebook just about had that corner wrapped up, along comes a new technology that is really taking the world by storm. By the way, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's easy. Just go to Twitter and sign up to follow Albert Mohler. That's one word, M-O-H-L-E-R. And I put out several a day, often with comments about world events. It's microblogging. That's the best way to look at it. It's a small 140-character announcement that actually, by disciplined conversation and editing, can say a great deal. You can also follow this radio program by signing up at Twitter to follow Mohler Radio. Again, one word. The New York Times has one of those stories you don't expect. It's actually an op-ed piece found in the paper, and it was in Saturday's edition. I bring it in because it deals with something I mentioned earlier this week about abortion and the New York Times. When we had Scott Klusendorf on the program last week, I mentioned on the air that when abortion was first a national controversy in the United States, the New York Times was one of those papers that crusaded against it. And now Kate Manning has written this op-ed published in Saturday's edition of the New York Times on the abortion wars. It's entitled The First Time Around, and it is an acknowledgement of the fact that the New York Times is very much on the other side. The New York Times, commenting on the death of an abortionist, said it was a bloody ending to a bloody life. The New York Tribune wrote, "The end of sin is death." The New York Times editorialized that this abortionist's death was the end to, quote, an odious career. Now, I mention this just to make clear that there has been a huge press revolution on the issue of abortion. The media, we're looking at this in very different terms. And as much as we've had to talk about the tragedy that took place in Wichita, and as much as the pro-life movement has found it necessary, absolutely necessary, to state again and again that there's absolutely no justification for the use of violence in response to the challenge of abortion, the reality is that we are in this particular battle up against a media that is basically almost monolithically opposed to the culture of life. And it is historically important to recognize it was not always that way. The New York Times, which is now editorially entirely pro-abortion, was at one time in exactly the opposite position. Today at my website at albertmiller.com, I posted an article entitled A Matter of Pride, and it has to do with something I've discussed on this program already, and that is the fact that President Barack Obama has declared June to be Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month. What I deal with in this article is the reality that every person is going to make a moral judgment about homosexuality, about homosexual acts and homosexual relationships. In terms of the media discussion, the entertainment discussion, the larger cultural chatter about homosexuality, the one issue almost everyone wants to avoid is the moral question. But morally serious people have to answer that question. You will believe either that homosexuality and homosexual acts are wrong and inherently sinful, disordered, or you will believe that it's a morally neutral issue and that sexual acts are rendered moral or immoral in terms of their intention or context, or you'll believe that homosexual acts are morally honorable. Now, when you declare Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month, as President of the United States, you're making a moral judgment about homosexuality. And by the way, President Obama is not the first to do this. In the year 2000, President Bill Clinton put forth a similar declaration. Interestingly, his was just called Lesbian and Gay Pride Month. That was back in the year 2000. It shows you that 9 years later, that particular movement has grown such that there's now the necessity of adding the words bisexual and transgender to the month. But the bigger issue for me is pride. If we as Christians really do understand homosexual acts to be inherently sinful, and I'll be as transparently candid as I can be, I can find no other way to read the Bible, both in the Old and New Testaments. The consistent, comprehensive condemnation of homosexuality is sinful, is something that just has to be faced squarely. It doesn't identify homosexuality as the only sin. It doesn't even identify homosexuality as the only sexual sin. There would be a greater number of heterosexual sins named by name in the Bible and explicitly condemned. Now, the Bible doesn't leave us just dealing with sin either. It points us to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ as the means of our rescue from sin. But that rescue makes no sense if we minimize sin. If we confuse sin, we confuse the gospel. If we deny sin, we deny the need for the gospel. If we deny our own sin, we deny our own need for a Savior. The problem with Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Pride Month is the word pride, first of all. We cannot find pride in our sin, neither in the sin of others nor in our own sin. Pride itself is such a temptation, and pride is perhaps at the very heart of the origin of sin. But to declare Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month is to make a declaration that is very morally significant. With a few words, the President of the United States conducted more or less a moral revolution. It's one that deserves our note. I wrote about it at albertmuller.com. You'll find my article, A Matter of Pride. I think it really is important. Love to hear from you on that or any other topic. Just write me at mail@albertmuller.com. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Adolescence is a process in terms of physiology, and it has been true for human beings since the very beginning, that in terms of developmental phases, there is a phase that requires maturation between childhood and adulthood. But in our contemporary culture, we have invented a whole new reality we call adolescence. We've developed a whole new genus, a whole new species we call the teenager. And we tend to take for granted the fact that it's always been this way. It hasn't always been this way. The transition between childhood and adulthood in most societies has been very brief. And the process has been a rather rapid introduction into the duties and responsibilities of adulthood. In the United States in the 20th century, after the Industrial Revolution, and with the urbanization of American culture, people leaving the farm and moving more into cities and towns, the great urban centers of this country, we developed such things as the community high school, in which we basically institutionalized a period of life known as adolescence. What we have seen in the last 20 years is an expansion of adolescence into upper ages. And we now talk about extended adolescence going throughout the 20s for many young people, even into the 30s, some now argue, between childhood and the onset of adult responsibilities. There's a kickback to this, and I'm glad to say so. There's a necessary kickback to this because what we're looking at is a basic failure, a structural failure, a moral failure, a cultural failure, I would argue, an ecclesial failure, that is a failure in the church to encourage persons to grow up and to take on the glorious responsibilities of being an adult Christian. But there are some hard things involved in this. Alex and Brett Harris want young people, teenagers in particular, to do those hard things. As a matter of fact, they've written a new book published in 2008 entitled Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. Both Alex and Brett Harris are well known in the evangelical community. They are now students at Patrick Henry College. And Brett Harris is with me on the air today. Brett, good to talk with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, Dr. Mueller.
All right, Brett, so what do you think about this sociological phenomenon of the development of adolescence? You are really concerned with what's going on there. How do you see it?
Well, we started when we were 16 a movement that we called the Revolution, or really we just tapped into something that God was already doing in the hearts of young people. But what we're really doing is rebelling against that whole mindset that you talked about that views the teen years as a vacation from responsibility and as some period of limbo between childhood and adulthood. And we're saying we need to return to the historical and biblical understanding of the teen years as the launching pad of life.
All right, so what's gone wrong? What's your diagnosis of the problem?
Dr. Mueller, this is Alex. I'm actually on the line now as well. Answering your question, the myth of adolescence, really, it's only been around for the past 100 years or so. If you look back over history, especially if you look at God's Word, you won't find this idea that we have today of the teenager or the adolescent. Instead, you'd find that young people were expected to contribute, that they were contributing members of society. And around 100 years ago, things really changed with child labor laws, with mandatory schooling laws, which were intended to fix real problems. You had some unintended consequences, and that was that young people moved into the position of being not contributors but consumers. Instead of being active, they had to be entertained, they had to be preoccupied, and that gave birth to modern youth culture, which really is is a financial industry that really preys upon the very worst in young people, the very worst in human beings, sinful tendencies like pride, greed, lust, insecurity, envy, jealousy, and the like.
Well, let's talk for just a moment about this contemporary phenomenon. I want to stretch it out just a little bit because I think many people just assume that it has to be this way. And speaking of whether it's the high school years, the middle school years, or even the college years, the expectation of many parents, the expectations of many church leaders is that this is a period of time where you're lucky just to keep a kid out of trouble. And as a matter of fact, Alex, some of the things you mentioned, that came out of the concern back in the earliest decade of the 20th century, between the year 1899 and 1909, there was an explosion of books about the boy problem, in particular, juvenile delinquency and all the rest. And so they were basically just looking at how to keep kids out of trouble. Now, one of the things that you know is going on in a lot of church ministries and youth ministries is, let's just keep these kids so that they're out of trouble. Now, thankfully, you guys are aiming for something a little higher than that.
We absolutely are, and this is Brett speaking. Charles Spurgeon has a great sermon he preached on this very topic. It was based on Psalm 1, where it talks about, blessed is the man who doesn't walk in the way of sinners. And he says, we can kind of get this sense of negative purity because we're not standing in the way of sinners or sitting in the seat of scoffers. But then he says, but is your delight in the law of the Lord? Do you make it the man of your right hand? Because if you don't, the blessing of Psalm 1 doesn't belong to you. And that's really what we've done in the church. We've become so content with this negative purity of not doing all the wrong things, but we're not doing anything. We're not passionate about the Lord. We're not growing in our faith. We're not students of his word. And it's really a devastating and crippling effect on the church.
All right, let's talk about your title. The title of the book is Do Hard Things. And I believe that's also the title of the Revolution Conference that you're holding. Is that true around the country?
Yes, that's right. What started as a blog in 2005 when we were 16 now is a full website, dohardthings.com. With over 32 million hits, we have a conference tour, as you said, of the same message, and a book that is titled Do Hard Things. And really, that is a challenge to teens to step outside their comfort zones, to stand up for what's right, regardless of the cost, and to be used by God now, not 10 years from now. It really goes back again to the whole myth of adolescence idea that our culture is so pervasive in our culture that you can't really accomplish anything meaningful in these years of your life, that getting serious about your relationship with God, getting serious about preparation, getting serious about responsibility happens after you graduate from high school or after you graduate from college or after you've lived your life and done all the things you want to do, then you get down to business. And we're saying, no, that starts now. It needs to start now. And we've seen young people really respond to that message.
All right. Now, I believe that you're kicking off this series of conferences here in Louisville, Kentucky on the 20th of June. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
All right. And I see you're going to be in Chicago, Illinois on July the 11th, in Orange County, California, July the 25th, in Birmingham, Alabama on August the 29th, and in Washington, D.C. on September the 19th. How can folks find out more about the conference?
Well, they can find out more by just going to our website, dohardthings.com. All the information is there. They can read about everything, watch videos about some things, download brochures and everything right from that location.
All right, let me find out a little information here. Alex, I'm speaking to you from where? Where are you at the moment?
I'm actually in Colorado.
All right, and Brett, where are you?
And I'm home in Portland, Oregon.
All right, well, I'm glad to have you both on the line. I'll ask you to hang on here through the next break. And when we come back, I want to be very, very specific. I think we need to talk about the hard things here. What are the hard things that you are particularly encouraging teenagers to do? What are the hard things that are being now undone that should be done? We're going to talk about that when we come back. I hope that that you're really involving some young people in this discussion. Love to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Parents, youth pastors, all interested persons, frankly, that should include everyone listening to me now. Give me a call, 877-893-TALK.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. My guests today, Alex and Brett Harris, authors of the book Do Hard Things, A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. They are also leading a tour known as The Revolution. That's with a B, not a V, which is going to be going on this summer and into the fall. When we went into the break, Alex and Brett, I was asking the question, you have the title Do Hard Things. What kind of hard things are you talking about?
Well, we have what we call five kinds of hard things that we're encouraging young people to do, five different chapters in our book where we unpack each of these. But the first one is things that take you outside your comfort zone. The second is things that go beyond or above what's expected or required. The third is those things that are too big to be accomplished alone. The fourth is those things that don't earn an immediate payoff. And the final one is things that challenge the cultural norm or really go against the flow. And all of those things are very hard. They're not secret or mystical or helpful to just some people. They're really the way that we step outside our comfort zone, the way we stretch, grow, strengthen ourselves, and really are used by God to make a difference in the lives of those around us.
Those are rather thematic, though. They're pretty general. Give me some specifics about what you're talking about here.
Well, when we're talking about things that take you outside your comfort zone, that could include activities like public speaking, learning a new skill, expanding an old one, traveling new places, meeting new people, really anything that takes you outside the rut of your normal day-to-day, week-to-week activities. And the reason these things are challenging is because they're unfamiliar, they might be scary, but they usually become our greatest memories, and they usually end up growing our comfort zones for the future, for greater things God might call us to do.
All right, roll on through some of these other hard things you're talking about.
Okay, well, this is Alex. I'll take the next one then. Things that go beyond what's expected or required. That would be, for example, you're a young person in school. You only need a C to pass a class, but you aim for an A+, not because you need it, but because your aim is excellence, not just doing no harm. You don't want to just not do bad things, like we talked about in the last segment. You actually want to do things that are good. That could include volunteering to clean up after the church breakfast, staying late at work without pay to help a friend finish a job, just any of those things where you're not required to do them, but you do it because you want to serve, because you want to grow, because your pursuit is excellence, not just getting by.
Okay, now what's distinctively Christian here, though? I think those things are great, and I appreciate them, and as both a parent and as an educator and a pastor, I see the desperate need for that. But what's distinctively Christian? What kind of distinctively gospel-oriented things are you looking for here?
Well, as Christian young people, or really just as Christian people, we are called by God to fulfill a great commission. That is the gospel. It's taking the gospel to the world. And so when we're talking to young people who are in a season of preparation, we're encouraging them to do the kind of things that provide them with the character and with the competence that they need to be able to go out and live that message throughout the rest of their lives. Well, at the same time, we don't want them to put off living out that great commission, as teenagers. And so we encourage them to do those big things. We encourage them to take stands. We encourage them to go against the flow, all in order that God may be glorified, that his gospel may be preached, and that souls will be saved.
All right, that's really helpful. Now let me talk about some distinctively teenage things. What are some distinctively, gospel-oriented things that perhaps someone who is in middle school or high school, maybe even in college, can think about doing? What are some of the things that get outside the comfort zone and really can become a way of making that gospel call, that Christian responsibility, tangible?
Well, I think if you look at the different commands in Scripture that God has for us as Christians, both as young Christians or as older Christians, all of them are hard. Fighting against sin in our lives is hard. Reading the Bible faithfully is hard. Sharing the gospel is probably the hardest thing that as Christians we're called to do, because there's just so many dynamics there where we're scared to talk to people, we're afraid that we won't make sense, that they won't understand, or that they'll ridicule us. All of these things are difficult, and I think a lot of times as Christians we feel like if something's difficult, then it's not spiritual. And if we really were spiritual or holy, that everything would just be easy. But God calls us to take up our cross daily and follow Him. And all of those commands, though hard, are very, very good and will glorify God and spread the gospel.
Very, very well said. Let's remember there are those who've been adolescents who've been martyrs for the faith and even now are being persecuted for the faith. When we think about doing hard things in this culture, we need to remember there are folks who are doing the hardest of things for the name of Christ right now outside our sight. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The book is entitled Do Hard Things. The authors are Alex and Brett Harris, and their Revolution Tour takes place this summer and into the fall. Alex, Brett, God bless you. It's great to have you on the program today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Mohler.
Thank you, and best wishes on the tour. And again, glad for folks to know about the book. Folks, I really want now to throw the conversation to you, because the issue now is what we're going to do. Summer is a very interesting time to be having this discussion, because this is the time of year when a lot of people think there's nothing they need to do. And that's especially tempting for those who are out of school, and what they need is a much greater challenge. And it's not just, however, over the summer. It's a reality. What we've done to adolescence is to create this this in-between time, this bracketed time. And as we discussed in this program already, it's a time when we treat young people as if they have to be entertained, and as if perhaps the highest threshold expectation we have is that they will stay out of trouble. So that if we get them through adolescence and they haven't been arrested, and they haven't flunked out of school, and they haven't embarrassed us horribly, and they haven't gotten addicted to this or that, then we're all right. But that is just not enough. Not for Christian families, not for Christian parents, not for Christian churches, and not for Christian young people. The reality is that we have invented adolescence and made of it what it never has been in human history before. And we are to blame. This isn't blaming the kids. This is a process, a phenomenon into which they have walked, into which they have grown. The issue is now, how do we reverse this trend? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Well, we're talking about doing hard things. Let me mention some of the hard things that really need to be done. There's the hard thing of taking a stand and being able to back it up with argument. And if you're an adolescent in America today, if you're on a high school campus, I don't care what kind of high school it is. If you are in any kind of peer culture, and you are, you're going to have to find the courage to take your ground, to stake a claim, to make an assertion, and to back it up with argument. That whole process is something we come back to again and again on this program. There are a lot of people who are ready to make the assertion, but they can't back it up with an argument. The hard thing is not merely having the courage to say the right thing, but to be able to back it up with an argument that shows you are knowledgeable about the position you take. I was talking with a parent the other day, and he was talking about his teenage daughter, and he said, you know, she really has a very difficult time understanding the relative importance of questions. And this young girl was about 15 years of age, and he said, you know, the problem is that the question, which shirt do I wear, is often perhaps taking up more of her time than what am I going to do with my life? Well, that's kind of what you stereotypically think of happening in adolescence. You know, the local is what's most important. The thing that is perhaps most shall we say obsessive is how am I going to look? What am I going to say? Who am I going to be with? Am I going to have fun? It is the parents' responsibility, however, to use that as a teaching opportunity to say, you know, at the end of the day, even a week from now, you're not going to remember what you wore. But what's really important is going to be what you did and what you said and whether or not you represented Christ. These are big issues, and it's not a gender issue, really. There are different issues for teenage males and teenage females, but the reality is it's really something we've done to virtually all young people. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Florida where Chris is online. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Glad to hear from you.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to say first of all that I'm in complete agreement with you, but you're correct. It starts with the parents in the household. I believe the parents have to be accountable, and whatever the kids see in the household, that's the same thing that they're going to follow. The parent is the greatest role model a child has. It is not good enough to stay out of trouble. It is not good enough just to get by. I believe that's the devil's way of just having us just slide through life, accomplishing, you know, nothing. I truly believe that there's more to life and God has more for us than just getting by, than just, you know, scheming our way through. So I'm in a complete agreement with you, but I do believe that it's the parents' job to raise kids, and it's not society's job or, you know, superstars and these athletes and all the different media programs to raise our kids. I believe it's our job, and we have failed so far.
All right, Chris, very strong word. I appreciate that. I think you're spot on. That's exactly right. You cannot go to any other source, first of all, but parents. And one of the things that we just have to affirm is that parents have the non-negotiable, non-delegatable responsibility to raise their children. And you can't expect parents who do not do hard things to produce offspring who are going to do those hard things. The avoidance of hard things is not just an adolescent problem. This is why we have the extension of adolescence. There are 50 and 60-year-olds who are basically teenagers when it comes to courage, teenagers when it comes to moral judgment. They are children when it comes to biblical knowledge. And the fact is there are too many parents, too many adults, too middle-aged persons who've never shared their faith, who've never taken a stand and said, this is what God says, this is the truth. I've got to study in order to know how to defend that claim, in order to informedly and wisely stake a claim and defend it. What we're looking at here is a failure in which adolescence is not just about a period of life. It's about perhaps a mode of life that continues many years into the future for all too many individuals. The number again is 877-893-8255. The whole issue of adolescence, by the way, that's a Greek word, and it makes sense. It goes back to a period of life. The Greeks were looking at the development of the person, and in particular looking at males, looking at a boy turning into a man, asking the question, how does that happen? And, of course, the Greeks and the Romans later had their own kind of ceremonies. They had their own process into which a boy was introduced into the world of men, in which at one point the Roman boy exchanged the clothes of a boy for the clothes of a man. It was a particular ceremony, and once he had given away the clothes of childhood and put on the toga, the cloak of a man, he was expected to take on adult responsibilities. Now, not the full load of being a husband and a father immediately, but the transition was quick, not slow. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, when you think about how we've turned the culture upside down. Rather than having boys looking forward to wearing the clothes of men, you've got grown men doing their very best to look like teenage boys. Fascinating, isn't it? This is a real challenge for Christian parents, and summer's a good time to think about it. This motto, do hard things, it's pretty good, isn't it? It's a distillation of a whole lot that gets down to courage and commitment and Christianity. It starts with parents, but yes, includes teenagers too. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. The subtitle of the book we've been talking about here, the Do Hard Things book, is A Teenage Rebellion Against Low Expectations. I want to take those last two words for a minute. Low expectations. That's not just true of adolescence. Perhaps distinctively true, and in a more exaggerated way true, but in a no less genuine threat to the Christian faith and to Christian faithfulness. I think low expectations really mark too many churches, too many families, too many parents, too many adults, too many Christian leaders. And the reality is that low expectations produce very low results. That simply isn't compatible with Christianity. The Apostle Paul in the book of Philippians says that we are to set our minds on those things which are excellent and those things which are above. You start thinking about that, it's not about low expectations, it's about high expectations. We should have aspirations that are so exhilarating that they they consume us in such a way we know that in one lifetime we can never get all the things done we want to do. You know, I can tell you right now, you ought to be in a position where there are more books you want to read than you're ever going to be able to read in a lifetime. You're going to throw yourself at it and do what you can do. There will be more people than you can reach than in a lifetime that you want to reach. There will be more great things you want to do, more lives you want to influence, more people you want to teach. For that matter, more fields you want to plow, more walls you want to build. More bridges that you want to design. These are things to which we ought to throw ourselves to the glory of God and find the glory of God in pushing ourselves here. Low expectations really reveal a very low understanding of what it means to be made in the image of God. Have you thought about that? God made us in His image. We're the only creature made in His image. And being made in His image, we're the only creature able to know Him. Now, how could the creature that God made in His own image hold itself to low expectations? And we're not talking about hubris and pride here and thinking that this is about us. We are talking about the fact that we've been given an exhilarating opportunity. Every single second and moment of life is an opportunity to do something or to do nothing, to move forward or to move backwards. Yes, I'm very, very thankful for a movement that is pushing adolescents to do hard things. But I got to tell you, what we really need is a church-wide, kingdom-wide movement to get all of us doing those hard things. To keep us doing those hard things, not because of the sake of the hard things, but for the sake of the Lord Jesus Christ and for the glory of God. I'd rather be found aiming at hard things and at the end of life realizing I'm never going to get them all done. We'll turn it over to the next generation, should the Lord tarry, and let them raise the expectations even higher. A sad, sad thing it would be, not only to end adolescence, but to end life and look back and say, I really didn't do much. I didn't do many things that were hard. I'll meet you tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday on the Albert Miller Program. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.